Hi, everybody. Welcome to Green Shoots. I'm Ryan Ballagy. It's great to have you with us. We are joined by Five Iron Golf's CEO and co-founder, Jared Solomon, today. Jared, thanks for coming on with us. We appreciate it. We're here to kind of talk about Five Iron's future growth plans, and that starts with this idea of a franchise program. You guys have owned and operated dozen and a half editions of Five Iron Golf all around, and now you're getting into the franchising business. So what's the motivation behind the move, and how is it going so far?
Yeah, but thanks for having me on. Really excited to be here. Honestly, we had so many DMs, so many people reach out and say, like, hey, I want to open an indoor facility like Five Iron. I want to open a Five Iron. And we're either seeing people fail trying to open their own or just say, whatever you guys are franchising. And eventually we thought, all right, let's give the people what they want. That's always sort of been our philosophy with the customers and trying to listen to them for feedback. And same for this, we listen to the customers. Launched franchising well over a year ago. Didn't realize we were getting ourselves into in terms of the hurdles and loops and bureaucracy of franchising, but now we can finally offer it. It's something we're excited about. The demand has been great so far and a lot of positive feedback.
From a franchising perspective, what's the difference in picking potential franchisees and locations as opposed to Five Iron Golf Corporate doing it themselves?
Yeah, I would say. At the end of the day, we more or less trust the people, right? You know, we give feedback on locations, obviously, and you know, all the lessons that we've learned about you know where the revenue is coming from and everything in between. But at the end of the day, you know, a lot of the best franchises, you hey, this place in Oklahoma or Tulsa that we would never consider going, or India, right? Where we just opened in India says like, it would crush it here. We got to open one here. How can we make it happen? And that sort of how a lot of it ends up starting, to be honest. And honestly, it led to some really interesting relationships and hopefully some very, very successful locations.
What are you looking for in a franchisee? And I guess just as much, what's the franchisee looking for from you in Five Iron Golf more than just a brand?
Yeah, it's terrifying to be honest. I mean, you spend, you know, we're not, a lot of these companies, they raise a bunch of money at the beginning and they hire all these fancy people. And then they grow the company that way. I started, you know, with our other co-founders on the floor serving customers and making the guacamole and bartending. And really, you know, we talk about defending the brand. I mean, I stood outside of our first location with a golf club, just trying to pull people up from Manhattan into the store. And the main thing that we worry about with franchising is just putting other people in control of our, you know, our brand standards. And you can have every document in the world that says they have to do this or whatever. At the end of the day, you want to find people that truly get it. They believe in customer service. They believe in, you know, treating customers well. And, you know, identifying those people is really the start to finding a successful partner in doing this. And then in terms of what they look for us, I think we're pretty unique in terms of the value proposition for franchising. There's really other indoor golf franchises out there. They are indoor golf franchises. That's what they started. That's what their business model is built on. You know, I think the fact that we can come with saying, hey, we've operated 20 of these. We're still in business. We've got good investors. We've seen, you know, almost a decade of things go wrong and right and lessons learned from like what your bag storage should look like, or the technology you should use in the sim, or which contractor to use, or the red flags you would get into for a lease, or I mean, the million things that an operator has as an advantage for someone just saying, you know, use these simulators or something like that. So I think what they hopefully are looking for and what we see is that we can kind of give them, I don't want to say soup to nuts because every location is different, every situation is different, but like a pretty holistic and realistic view of how much it's going to cost. What to spend money on, what not to spend money on, how to lay out the spaces, how to design them, how to do social media, what to do when this tech problem happens or that tech problem happens. So I think that's what they're looking for, and hopefully what we can deliver.
At what point, I mean, other than kind of just demand from interested parties, at what point did you guys decide as a brand, hey, maybe the expansion path is franchising and owning and operating as opposed to kind of picking out spots as you'd done previously and running at a dozen and a half of them?
Yeah, I mean, look, I wish I could say we had this great 5-year plan that, you know, on year 2.5 we moved, you know, it was you know, a couple really pushy people interested in franchising. It's like, all right, well, let's get the document started, right? And I don't know how much you or your listeners know about franchising, but it's a year process to get the legal documents and the business documents. So you almost have to green light something, spend loads of money on it to sort of do it the right way. And then a year from then, are those parties even interested? Is there going to be any interest? So you almost have to say, let's start this. You hire the lawyers, you hire the business consultants, and then, you know, honestly, you forget about it for a year. Then the year comes and you're like, all right, well, we can do franchising now. And you kind of gauge the interest, and then all of a sudden there's interest, and then you hire people to get more interest and run it. And all of a sudden you have a franchising business. And I am sure there are smarter people than myself that have done it in a more dynamic way, but that's kind of how it's happened for us. One thing leads to the other, listen to the people and keep going.
I feel like this kind of thing comes up a lot with people in business, whatever your business is. You found some success, you have a path forward you have in mind, but then something happens along the way that you didn't intend, good or bad, and that changes something. That changes how you approach it. I mean, are there other examples of that in running Five Iron that have come along where you're like, oh, maybe we should do this, or maybe we should go down this path, or not go down this path instead?
Oh my God. I mean, there are a thousand examples. I mean, the most interesting example to me is our first location on 19th and 5th. So Five Iron, the Fives for 5th Avenue, Irons for the Flatiron District. Our first location on 19th and 5th. It was a former yoga studio, and it had a shower in it, and it was more expensive to take out the shower than to leave it there. So we look all these drawings, all these bids, like, come on, we can take the shower out. We ended up just leaving it there. I thought, you know, I'm going to sleep here enough. Maybe I'll shower and work the next day, or golf pros could shower. It ended up becoming the foundation for our membership program and our locker rooms and all of the, you know, now every location has showers and towel service and some have laundry service and beautiful country club amenities. So that's one where you just sort of like, you know, you learn something and pivot from there. And I think that's a great story. I know, I'm sure there are a million examples for sure, but that's always a good one.
As you're evolving, right? Your business is evolving. Your brand evolves too, right? I mean, so does indoor golf. So does the awareness of it, the concepts of it. What has changed about maybe at all about the presentation of Five Iron Golf, the vibe inside of it? How has that evolved in the last few years?
Yeah, I mean, I think I was speaking to the industry. It really started out as this mom and pop, almost how driving ranges were before Topgolf in my mind.
Yeah.
And there still is a lot of it. You put in two simulators or four simulators and a cooler with some beer, and all of a sudden it's a crazy novel experience at the time, right? Awesome.
Yeah.
Hooked me, still think it's a great time to do it that way. But I would say the market's matured, even to the sense where I remember 5, 6, 7 years, it was all about what simulator you're using. Are you using Full Swing? Are you using About Golf? Are you using Golf's On now? And it's sort of like, now it's really changed to be like, well, what's the experience you're providing? What's the customer service? What's the food? What's the beverage program look like? What's the art look like? What's the design? How do you, you know, host corporate events and things like that? And even on the technology side, cool, you have TrackBay. Like, well, what's your camera system? Are you using Sportsbox AI? Are you using, you know, what kind of clubs and training aids do you have? So I would just say it's matured on both fronts, on the entertainment front, to like a real entertainment concept where you could have a Goldman Sachs 300-person company event. Also, you know, in my opinion, you got some of the highest, most high-tech golf lessons in the world at a place like Five Iron.
Is there still kind of is there a sophistication among the clientele now that maybe was more along the lines of a curiosity more when you started? How has that changed?
Man, that's a good question. I honestly think the customers are, golf is so much fun. And so you have the people that are addicted to it already or love golf. And they're the same showed up on day one, they still show up today. And they would hit in a mat, they would hit against a brick wall. They just love hitting golf balls. And if they can play a round of golf with their buddies in the winter, they're going to love it. I would say the sophistication on the corporate event side of things, like I said, but really, even on the new golfer side of things, like one thing I talk about all the time is, you know, shot euphoria and like, you know, just getting people in. The coolest thing about Five Iron has always been getting people in for the first time or earlier in their golf career. And then they hit a ball and they get it in the air and they get that feeling that we all get every once in a while in a round of golf. And we're like, oh, this is amazing. And then they want to chase that feeling. And it's awesome. It's like the best part about golf. So it's letting people experience it for the first time. A five iron or anywhere else is cool. And I would say, you know, to answer a question about what's changed a little bit, I would say when we started, you know, you took golf lessons during the golf season and you practiced during the golf season. Now it's just such a year round sport where actually I'm going to redo my swing during the winter and, you know, get club fit during the winter. So you're seeing, you know, club fitting be a year round type industry in a place like New York, which is cool. People practicing all winter and just being ready for the season. And honestly, what that leads to, in my opinion, which is really cool, people like doing things that they're good at. If they've been practicing all winter and then they go out in the spring and they start, you know, posting good scores, they love golf even more. And then they want to taste it again, right? So I think just making a year-round sport has changed a little bit since we started, for sure.
Maybe this is kind of hard to answer, but what's the dynamic like for being two different sets of customers? One being someone who's kind of in an urban environment around a five iron, maybe a frequent customer, and then kind of goes outside of the city or further out in the city to go play golf, versus maybe that customer who is playing a lot of physical golf, maybe in the suburbs, but wants to come into five iron golf and have a great time, whether that's with themselves, their friends, whatever.
Yeah, I think it's just a really dynamic space. And you know, we talk about our ecosystem. It's something that we pride ourselves on a lot. You can come in and just bring 6, 8, 4, just a date night, have a blast. Like you would, you know, you're coming into the city to do something, some form of entertainment. You're going to spend $1 zillion at a restaurant, or you're going to go to a concert or something like that. So to make it sort of that special night out where you have at it, you know, I think we're a great place to do that. And then, you know, certainly for the regulars, there are people that show up 6 times a week, the five iron kind of thing. So it kind of fills a bunch of different roles, and even our hours, you know, 6 a.m. till midnight or even later, depending on the location. And it is two different customers for sure in some ways. In other ways, one of the, you know, I don't say myths or some of the things that like I was told when we started this, it's like the Wingfoot member is not going to want to come in and drink, and they're going to want it to be, you know, gold and brown and dark colors and not have music on. At least in my mind, that was sort of the perception. The truth is, you know, I'm a member of a club in Westchester, and just because you care about your game and want to improve doesn't mean you also don't want to, you know, have at it and have a good time. And you know, as someone that's fairly new to golf, when I started this, the outdoors, the indoors, it's all the same. Like people want to have fun and have a good time and decompress. That doesn't mean that they don't care and want to get better.
Yeah, they don't need the fine smell of mahogany everywhere. That just,
yes. Yeah.
Just maybe certain places they would prefer it than others. But
you can both like mahogany, but also like graffiti and street art and music. Like, well, humans are just a little bit more dynamic than maybe golf has given them credit for over the years.
That's an interesting point. And I think that's something that's taken golf a long time to get around to. This idea that anybody can play golf. Anybody can love golf. And golf can be, hypothetically, for everybody. And I feel like Five Iron has embraced that really well, and maybe broader golf is starting to embrace that a little bit better.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, you can fix a divot mark with a backwards hat on, you know, just as well. And you can be an asshole with a collared shirt and a tucked in and felt, you know, just as well too. So I think, you know, there's certainly room for not relaxed, I don't think that's right, but a different perspective on what people are wearing and making it more comfortable and approachable and things like that. Just as well, there's room for the tradition, and you know, everyone loves the British Open because of the tradition and Augusta and all that stuff. I don't think that needs to go anywhere. I think there can be space for both, and you know, the golf world won't just be fine. I think it'll be better, and a lot of the fears I think are you know, unjust or you know, false in terms of what's going to happen.
Yeah, I think of it in all of this, the whole grow the game stuff, the end of the day is expanding the number of people that feel comfortable within the confines of our sport, whatever that is, not just trying to get them to come to our version of it, but embracing a bunch of different versions of it.
Yeah, and I think, look, grow the game, which I hear all the time, and I like to think we're a big part of it, certainly that new person. But I think what the OEMs are finally catching up on, and all the brands, is the 8 handicap that played in high school but got a job in finance in the city that has kind of given up golf because their parents stopped bothering them, but now all of a sudden refines love for it. Guess what? That person now goes from an 8 to a 4 again. They're a massive consumer of the sport. Like, that's growing the game too, getting that person back in who played when they were a kid. And that person's going to buy a bag and they're going to buy clubs and they're going to join a country club. And that story is the one that I think I wish was told more, that that sort of person who just falls in love or becomes a, like, oh, this is one of the things I do. So now I'm positively obsessed, right?
Yeah.
That person, just how much money they spend. And that's the one taking lessons and just in it, like on YouTube, watching videos, listening to this podcast, right? There's so many of those people that I feel like we're building, as well as getting those sort of first timers in the door.
That does feel like a huge, like the bounce from COVID. I mean, I'm sure there are plenty of new golfers, but it feels like I've heard from so many people that I know personally that used to play golf. Maybe they played high school golf or whatever. They stopped for whatever reason. Now they're back and they're more into it than they've ever been. And I think you're right. We probably haven't talked about that enough over the last couple of years.
I certainly think so. And those are the ones, you know, it used to be like, does 5-iron help the golf world or top golf or something like that? I think we're past that point where
long past that.
It does. But still, I just think, man, just seeing, and it's so cool to see. I mean, there was one guy who I remember who like played on like the national team for the Canadian team back in the day and like had given it up. It was a associate Goldman. And now he's messaging me about like, I'm putting a TrackMan in my home and I'm doing this club and I got my dad this and I'm buying all these clubs and I'm playing in AM tournaments again and everything like that. Like, that's just a really cool story to see. And certainly we're celebrating.
Just kind of wrap everything up. What are some ways that you can leverage 5-iron golf, maybe then other than physical locations, to kind of make more of those types of golfers, either people who are lost and are now found or new people who are newly obsessed with it?
I think it's a great question. And honestly, one of my goals over the next year or so is to like tell the story of 5-iron outside of the four walls of 5-iron. And, you know, yes, we're indoor golf entertainment, right? And I just think that's sort of selling our vision and what we do a little bit short in some ways. So, you know, we're looking at getting into media and content and we'll see what comes of it. And certainly keep an eye out on our Instagram, follow us there and YouTube and all that stuff. So I think that's one of the most obvious ways. Even we just signed a partnership with Breezy
Yep.
Golf and those guys. So like, and they're going to be a big piece of that in terms of the content and storytelling of what 5-iron is and everything like that. And to me, like 5-iron just represents so much more than just what we are in some ways specifically known for. And we're really excited about telling that story and telling all the stories of like access to golf and sport, you know, all around.
Well, Jared, thank you for coming on and talking with us. Really appreciate it. Congrats on all the success. If people are interested in the franchise program, is there a way they can reach out to you and kind of get to you directly?
Yeah, certainly go on our website. There should be a million links there. Or just honestly, if anyone has questions, comments, concerns, if any of your listeners want a free membership or lesson or hour to try it out, just hit me up directly. My email is Jared, J-A-R-E-D, at 5irongolf.com, all spelled out. Shoot me an email. Love to hear from you and happy to, especially if you've never been, happy to make sure your first time's a good one.
Thank you again. We appreciate it.
Absolutely. Thank you.